Best thing that's ever happened to you financially. Go.
Easy. Sold my car on Carvana. Amazing offer.
Really? I hit 200 on the scratcher.
Did the scratcher come to your house and hand you a check?
No.
How many scratchers did you hit to get that? I hit a button on Carvana.com once.
Okay, that's fair.
It's like the lottery, except you always win.
Not like the lottery at all, actually.
Exactly. Inexplicably good. Offer's worth bragging about. Sell your car today on Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Journey to June is where powerful stories meet intentional living. Each episode brings you closer to your authentic self through real, honest conversations with people who've walked the harder path, disrupted the norm, and are leading with purpose and leaving a bold imprint on the world.
Welcome back to Journey to June. I'm your host, Wendy Basilico, and today's conversation is about something deeper than performance. I like to ask, like, what kind of imprint do we want to leave, not just on the people who we know, but also on the people we may never meet? Today's guest is Olympian runner, coach, and leader Roberto Manje, and welcome to Journey to June. But underneath this accomplishment that he has many accomplishments, is what stood out most to me is in preparing for this conversation, is the humanity behind the journey that he lives, fatherhood, resilience, getting back up when life's knocked him down, and the desire to leave a world like, I know he has a big mission. We don't know what that is yet, but we know he has a big mission. So welcome, Roberto.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Really happy to be here.
Yeah. So like, tell me, where are you right now? And what's going on in your life? Because you just shared some big news.
Yeah, physically, I'm in my office in my home in Connecticut. Professionally, I'm in the process of transitioning, I guess I would say. I recently announced as of, I believe, last week, Thursday, Friday, that I had parted ways with New York Roadrunners, which a lot of people over the last decade or so have come to know me and associate me with. I've done some wonderful work with the New York Roadrunners organization. And yeah, I felt, you know, it was time to try something different. And, you know, I think it's a worthwhile challenge that I'm super excited to talk about in the very near future when I'm at liberty to talk about. But yeah, something near and dear to my heart.
Cool, cool. So tell us where you came from, because you have quite a journey. You've traveled. I know you speak many languages. Tell us your beginning when a childhood, like where you grew up and how you got into running.
Yeah, certainly. I'll try to be succinct because I'm a multicultural polyglot, I guess is the easiest way to say it. But I was born in Barcelona, Spain. Shout out in the 1980s, which is like archaic for my kids to think about. And then, my mother and my that side of the family is from West Africa, Equatorial Guinea to be exact. And so I split my first several years, first 5 years or so in Barcelona, Spain. And then I was kind of hopping back and forth between different countries in Africa, including Equatorial Guinea, Egypt, Mali, and South Africa as well, and Europe, and kind of just going back and forth. So that kind of exposed me to a lot of different cultures, language, peoples, and obviously sports. And then eventually I came over to the U.S. Around the age of high school. And yeah, I got my start in running when I was living in South Africa, and I was in primary school, I believe it was year five. So that's about like fifth grade. And they had a field day, which is like a day where all the kids from the school gather around and run and do different sports. And one of the things we did was like one or two laps around the school. I'm not quite sure how many, but the distance was about 2 kilometers, so 1.25 miles. And I finished second in the entire school behind a boy who was 2 years ahead of me, year seven. So yeah, the headmaster rang my folks and said, this boy has some ability in running. You should look into it. And that kind of just started that lifelong journey.
So fifth grade, nobody ran in your family? It was just came natural to you? Or like, talk to me a little bit, yeah, about like your, I mean, how did that come about? Are you just like, that day you just...
Yeah, I mean, I was always pretty athletic and like I said, exposed to a bunch of different sports in different countries I lived. I grew up playing rugby, cricket, squash, tennis, like, you know, every sport under the sun, never trying to specialize in anything. So, but yeah, my mother specifically was like a very, very good athlete in her day. So, and then we have a lot of other athletes in my you know, behind her and that side of the family. So sports was always something that I enjoyed, but I think for, especially for her growing up in West Africa, it's like, is one of the ways that you could also entertain yourself. And, you know, football, okay, soccer is big, basketball, but also just playing games where you're just running around the neighborhood with kids. So I kind of grew up the same way, running barefoot, running with obviously shoes on, but just being athletic. And yeah, I mean, they say, choose your parents wisely. So I clearly did. But one of the quotes I like to use is genetics loads the gun and lifestyle pulls the trigger. And I think my genetics obviously helped me to a certain extent. But then the lifestyle that I continue to live and use as an example for my own kids now is what's really kind of helped me maintain where I'm at and where I'm still going.
So when you think, I love that. I love that you were playing. I think that's missing in today's world, like the bare feet. Just being organic in how you play as children. We were just having this conversation in one of my group calls with all these athletes and how like parents are cuckoo. So when you think of your mom, how did she support you in, yeah, like how did she hold the container? I think that's very important when kids are in the, whether it's pursuit or just like starting to learn about sport. And how you're holding the container of how they're going after something they love. Like, how did she do it since she had the experience on the back end?
She was somebody, I mean, she still is to this day in anything I do. I'm an only child, so that probably also helps. That just supported me 100% in the sense that she, when I was younger, she didn't put any sort of limitations or barriers. If I said I wanted to be Superman, which at one point I wanted to be, like all little kids, she's like, yeah, go for it. She wouldn't say like, son, you can't fly. Obviously, she would also make sure I'm not going to take off from the roof and try to fly. But, you know, she just really raised me to not have any limitations and belief in anything I could do. And that just carried on as obviously I got older and a bit more common sense came into some of my desires and goals versus trying to be Superman or whatever. So. And then also, I think one of the lessons I've taken away from her is also she led by example, you know, like, so she was able to achieve, and she still is able to achieve a lot of great things in her life in different fields, not just in athletics, but in business and things like that. So that really set the blueprint and the foundation for me to like, okay, she's not just telling me I could do it, but she's doing it. So I try to kind of mirror that to how I parent my kids. My wife and I are really a great team, but we also want to make sure that our kids feel supported. But we are the first to say, like, why not? Like, don't set limits, you know, because when you don't set limits, you unlock more things that maybe you didn't think were possible. And that's not to say that everybody is going to achieve X, but like by not setting limits, then you are able to get further than maybe you thought. So for us, it's very important to have our kids have that sort of foundation. And I also, like my mom did for me, I live it. So it's more authentic and organic for them.
Love that. Not having a ceiling for these kids, because I think today it's very easy to be, make it softer or, you know, accommodating. And then they don't have these ways to push their edge or their limits. But doing that, when you were young and having no limits and really allowing your mother really pushing you to see what, like, you can do anything, Superman, you know, other people don't think like that. So did you have any, when you think back to like you starting to like go down that road of wanting more, being elite, do you remember being pushed against the norm? And do you, or did that bother you or not?
I think if I understand the question, I think it was, you know, you said push against the norm. I think I was always comfortable in this sort of or pseudo discomfort, and I still am to this day, meaning traveling as an only child, I didn't have a built-in friend anywhere we went immediately. Like, my kids are fortunate to have each other. I have three kids. So when we went from one country to another, one continent to another, different cultures, different languages, I was plopped into the middle of the school year or the start of the school year, whatever, like with oftentimes kids who have come up together since pre-K, whatever. So I was always comfortable in that discomfort. I guess I became better at finding like that motivation and that comfort intrinsically versus my environment, and then also being able to be more malleable to the different environments that I was in. So I think maybe to your question, like anytime I came up against something that was new or different, or maybe I was the one that was new or different, I was okay with that and comfortable and sort of expecting it. I also acknowledge, again, having three kids, I see three different personalities, that I'm wired the way I'm wired. So it's a little nature versus nurture. You know, you take another kid, put him in the same situation, the same sort of parents or upbringing, they might not react the same way. And again, I see that with my own kids. But it's the sort of thing where, like, you know, I use it with running. I say running meets you where you are. So like for me, it was more like I was meeting the environment where I was and like making it work for myself, and knowing that I wasn't supposed to use the sporting term, hit a home run every time at bat or immediately, but like in the long run, it would be okay.
Got it. And was your mom a solo mom? Did your parents split? Or?
Yeah, my mom, my parents divorced in the mid 90s. So yeah, she was basically a solo mom for the bulk of my life. But we have a very strong family unit with, my grandparents were no longer with us on her side, as well as aunts and other extended family. So I actually almost grew up with my cousins being like my siblings, who are primarily all in Europe, specifically in Spain.
So all of that experience before you move on from there, that younger life, would you say, like, you and your mom on your own traveling the way you did, would you say, when you think of your identity and the resilience that you had to, like, by moving around, I actually have I'm a single mom with a 13-year-old daughter that I've raised on my own, and she's moved 13 schools in 13 years. So like I get not different countries, but
yeah,
definitely there's an identity that's being formed by you experiencing all these different things. Do you really feel you knew who you were? I would say that would be my question.
Yeah, I think that's a brilliant question, and shout out to single parents and single moms. Always have a soft spot in my heart. But yeah, I would say that I always knew who I was. And again, a big thanks to that, to my mother, but also maybe the way I was wired, where I was always, I'm still very, introverted, but I also really do well with time on my own and I could entertain myself. So I always had a sense of who I was and what I liked to do and what I didn't like to do. So it was more of an excitement of and experimenting different environments and different cultures and different countries. But like, I was always the same person. Like, you know, I like to laugh and make people laugh and do sports and just do like kid stuff. And I was into comic books. And so what it really showed me, and even to this day, that across different cultures, across different languages, like we as people, and obviously I was a young kid at the time, but like we are very much similar in like what we want, even adults, like, you know, like health, happiness, family, friends, etc. And I was finding that across different cultures, just obviously to scale as being a young kid, but I always knew like who I was. And I actually, it sounds a bit like hubris, and I, you know, told my wife early on when we met, but like I actually like who I am, and I did then, I still do. So like I think that made it so I was genuinely happy anywhere we were, and just kind of I like to use surfing as an analogy, because I surf, and it was like I was just surfing the next wave, and knowing that I may fall off, but I'll be able to get back on. And I made great friends everywhere I went, and obviously I didn't get along with everybody, but that's also a lesson and part of life.
Yeah. And I love that symbol of being surfed, because one minute there's a certain wave, there's another wave. And what I hear you saying is that you had learned how to ride the waves no matter where you were. And really were good in your skin, in your own skin. Talk to me a little bit. So did you know young that you were going to be an Olympian, like in your mind? And or when did that idea of like, I can do this come?
Definitely not. Like I said, I did sports, but I think the first sport I truly wanted to go pro in or even think about was basketball. I started playing it before I moved to the U.S., but certainly by the time I got to the U.S., in the mid-90s, Michael Jordan, who hopefully every listener knows who that is, was just like God in basketball. I mean, he's still, you know, the GOAT in my opinion. But yeah, being a young, impressionable kid in the 90s and high school age and coming to the U.S. and I already spoke English, but, you know, maybe more accented at whatever. Sports was once again like the door opener. So I loved it. And so that's the one I wanted to go pro in. I was like, you know, like my mother bought me a life-size cardboard of Michael Jordan that I had in my room. And I was a late bloomer, but I would always measure myself every however often and put the marks and be like, okay, like when I get to be 6'6", I'll make it to the NBA. But again, like running was always there. I did a bunch of different sports. So I would say the first time I even started to contemplate it would have been close to my senior year of high school. At that point, I still played basketball, but I had given up the varsity team and was just focusing more on running. And that's when I really started to explode, meaning making states, nationals, things like that, starting to get letters from colleges, recruiting. So things that to that point hadn't happened in any of the other sports. I was like, oh, there's like a real path here. And I haven't really devoted as much of myself to running as I know I could, where I in the summers I've been going to basketball camps and blah, blah, blah. So I was like, let's see what happens if I, you know, invest more of my time and love and energy into running, which I did enjoy, but I was always just doing all the other sports. By 2000, which I was 17, 18, it was the Sydney Olympics, and I'd already spent a few visits to Equatorial Guinea, and, you know, they had been speaking to my mom and seeing, like, my results, and like, hey, this kid is one of ours. He's on track to, you know, be on, he's an Olympic track, like a discovery program, if you will. And so, you know, we spoke about it, and I was like, yeah, I don't think I'm ready yet. Like, let me take another 4 years to really develop and focus. So yeah, like through the next 4 years of university, it started to become like this sort of from pipe dream to the back of your mind to the forefront and, you know, just performing better and better. And yeah, then it became a reality by 2004, but it certainly wasn't the sort of thing. Like some people have the story of like, I had it in my calendar and a poster when I was 10. No, I had Michael Jordan flying through the air.
So I love it. I love learning from the different Olympians because everyone has a different journey of when they actually said they could do it. The people started to say, hey, this guy's got talent. He can go further with it. Or was it you pushing it?
It was definitely came in intrinsically. You know, like I said, I've always been able to motivate myself. It was also the sort of thing where, this is, you know, and I'm sure you're in the same boat, like dating myself, like in the late 90s, early 2000s, the internet wasn't what it is today. I mean, the internet almost didn't exist in the same way that it does. So it was the sort of thing where like you could do really well in your sport, but you were like not aware of everything that was going on in the outside world, you know? So like I had Sports Center and I could see the scores, but like it wasn't easy to find out like what the other preps or high school athletes were doing in real time across the country. So like you knew how good you were locally. For me, it was in New York State, but like you didn't know too much. So obviously eventually the evolution of social media and the internet and all that. So it was the sort of thing where it was like, oh, I'm doing better than I thought, or like, this is where I'm ranking and things like that. But like my own goals were there regardless. It was just more like, oh, now I'm more aware of like what college coaches are saying and universities are interested and things like that. Because before that, you just kind of live in your little vacuum of the mid late 90s of like the local paper, you know?
Yes, yes. I totally agree.
Which I still would have missed.
It would be actually nice not to have like all the information of everywhere. When you made the Olympics, what did it teach you about yourself beyond performance and achievement? Like when you actually made the Olympics, what was it teaching you about yourself in that journey?
Yeah, I mean, I think there was a few lessons there, like in the build up to it, the Olympic stuff, and then the post Olympic era, which in a sense I'm still in. But I think what thing it taught me is that I'm stronger than I gave myself credit for. And when I say strong, I don't mean like physically, like I could lift a table, but I mean like emotionally, and maybe almost metaphysically stronger, just because like it's such a pinnacle of sport, regardless of what your sport is, to get there. And you don't realize at the time all the expectations and the labels and everything that comes around it, because you're still you, like underneath all the layers of praise and communications and media and all that, like you're still you. So you wear that, but then suddenly it's like people are just putting on more and more on you. And if you're not ready for it or even expect it, which a lot of us weren't, especially, you know, again, back then with like the way the internet operated, it was a lot. I was trying to focus on just what I had done in high school and what I'd done in university and like on a semi smaller scale in terms of media and attention. It was something that you just couldn't prepare. So the fact that I was able to go through that and still survive both mentally and physically, psychologically, it showed me that, again, I'm stronger than I even thought I was. And that's a lesson that I've taken years later, post-collegiately, post-Olympics, post-running professionally, into the athletes and the clients that I work with, because their, you know, New York City Marathon or Berlin Marathon or whatever is almost like their Olympics, you know, it's the pinnacle of the sport that they're going to reach as far as running their first marathon or the 10th marathon or chasing a goal. So kind of give them sort of perspective and knowing like, hey, no matter how it goes, like you can control the narrative, you can control your emotions, and you're going to survive this. And there's always another day to run. So,
I mean, what a great coach you are, because you've gone through it in the way you have. But we talked that you really knew who you were early on, for that's not always the case. But how did you work on your emotions, and like what was your training? If you can take me to a point, either in Olympics or, you know, give me an idea of how you, like a day in the life of your pursuit in the Olympic journey, of how you worked on your emotions.
Yeah, I would say there was a lot of visualization back then and still present day. And part of it was also just strategically like working out different outcomes for the races. I qualified for the 1500 meters, which is about a metric mile or mile. So 3 3/4 laps around the standard 400 meter track. So there was a lot of visualization of like, okay, if this scenario happens, we'll do this. This is a likely pace, et cetera. So just kind of going over it in preparation. That way you would be able to kind of be prepared for any sort of circumstance that came up. That being said, it's still, you're doing something you've never done before, yet you're doing something you've done hundreds of times before. So that's like the sort of dichotomy of that, where like, okay, I'm preparing myself to do something that I've done before. So like, rest in that familiarity, but then you realize like, I've never done it to this scale. So you're just trying to balance that. So it was really just more of a going back and forth of like, okay, when you get to that edge of like anxiety, nerves, pressure, take a deep breath, take a step back, positive affirmation, and realize, yeah, you have done this before. Not at this level in a way, but you have done it. So it was more of that balancing act, which whether you pull it off successfully or not, there's a lot to be learned in that process, and even more so after the fact, because when you're in the fog of war, if you will, sometimes it's really hard to look back and understand like what you're truly going through, because you're in sort of balancing act of like survival, performance, reflection, execution. So again, these are all been fantastic lessons that I've been able to take years and years since with me to help other athletes perform in whatever endeavor they're undertaking.
So can you describe a moment where you were in the fog of the war, like a moment in time in maybe the Olympics, maybe in competition, where you were in it, and how did you work through like a moment that you're like, oh, it pushed my edge, but I hated it. I mean, I don't want to say hated it, but it was a moment that shifted me.
Yeah, I mean, sticking with the Olympics thing, I would say literally at the start line. But even before that, when we were in the call room. So, you know, growing up, like I said, I had posters of Michael Jordan, but like the Michael Jordan of my event and almost running in the Olympics stuff with Hicham El-Gurush, who to this day still has the world record in the mile and the 1500 meters. So he was like, there was somebody that we all looked up to because he is slash was the GOAT. So knowing a few days before, whenever the call sheets were released, that I had him in my heat was both like exciting and like terrifying, because like, holy cow, this is the guy you've come up through the sport having on your poster. Now you're about to line up next to him. So that was the sort of thing where it's like, okay, like I just said, like, okay, like take a deep breath. You've done this before, but you've never lined up with like the GOAT of GOATs right here, right? So it's like, how do you go back and forth and kind of find parity within that? And then additionally, it was then you get to the call room and it's like no fans, no coaches. It's super quiet. You're just sitting there and you're just, everybody's kind of sizing each other up. And some people don't know each other. Some people obviously know and everybody knows him. So in a way, I was like, hey, whatever you're feeling, whatever he's feeling, like this is the guy that everybody on the planet is looking at because he's expected to do it. He's number one world record holder. So I was like, any pressure you feel, they feel it even worse. So it's like that sort of, not in a way of like shifting the pressure towards him, but it kind of gave me a bit of perspective. So then, you know, we go out to the track and lo and behold, we're lining up next to each other and the cameras from maybe with NBC, whatever, they're just going by as they're going through the bios and they're putting the camera in each person's face for 2 seconds, 3 seconds, however long, while I guess the announcers are saying whatever they're saying. And that's when you're like, holy, you know, S word, like this is like very serious. And that's that, there's a moment there where it's like, okay, I want this camera out of my face. I don't even want to be here. I do want to be here, but like, I just like, just let me do what I came to do. So that's maybe the closest to moment to like what you're asking, whereas you're just like, it's almost a pseudo fight or flight. You're just like, you're just a ball and there's like, I want to get this going. Let's go, let's go, let's go. But like, I have to go through this like pseudo ritual, which I've watched hundreds of times on TV, but now I'm the one there and I have this guy next to me. So it was like such a special moment, but also so terrifying at the same time that it's a moment that has lived on with me since then and will always live on with me. And again, I was able to survive it. So, you know, kind of going back to giving that sort of perspective of being there, done that to people I work with.
Yeah. And even like, you gave a great visual of, I can see you on the line and he's next to you. What did that shift in you of belief? Because I think that pushes your ceiling a little higher because you're actually like next to the GOAT of who you've dreamed to be probably or beyond. What shifted after that for you? If you can go a little deeper of like what you took out of that moment.
I would say what shifted was just as sort of universal perspective that I've carried since and has given me a lot of strength, meaning that, okay, when you're in it, and I said the fog of war, like this is it. Like you're like live and die by this event. The world's gonna judge you, yada yada yada. Like you could get really in your head, and it could be paralyzing as far as performance goes. But even just literally, just like how you were able to move and operate, being able to survive that and come out the other side and still be like a successful human being, successful runner, go on to have a 12-year career and then like eventually, you know, meet my spouse, have a family, et cetera, to the point where I am at today. It's like, hey, like your life was not gonna, you weren't gonna live and die by that moment. It was massive, but like you were able to pivot from that. So it's like, it wasn't the end of the world. And at the time, again, being 22, in front of the Olympic, would-be Olympic champion, and like the cameras and all that, like you're really in the thick of it. And you think like, oh my God, like this is it. Like I can't. And being able to come out of that, and obviously hindsight helps a lot. It's like, hey, like be kinder to yourself. Like you are here. Like there's only 30 people in the world that are here or whatever the number is. Like, not to like excuse you that you've already made, but like you are fortunate to be where you are. It's a place that not many people on the planet get to be. And like, yeah, you're going to give it your all and it might go great. It might not, but like there's life after this. Like don't put so much pressure on yourself that you forget to enjoy the moment. And that's something where like, if I could go back in time, like 22 years later, yeah. First, I spooked myself because like, wow, this is what you look like. But I'd be like, hey, like young Roberta, like enjoy the moment, you know, like life is about these moments and not everybody gets them, and there'll be more life after this. So enjoy it.
Yeah. It's good. It's so easy to go back in time and tell us that ourselves that.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I mean, hindsight is great, but yeah. But again, that's why like people that I get to work with, they don't have that opportunity. So it's like, hey, let me be the voice of reason to give you that sort of perspective. And I think it's still okay to be nervous. It means you care about the result and you've invested time and resources to it. But like, don't get so wrapped up in it that you forget to enjoy the moment, you forget to live the moment, and also like maybe to the point where it becomes debilitating. You can't perform as well as you actually could and should.
Yeah, I remember when I played golf, I was older. So like I had the hustle, like I was like, I'm behind, like there was always, and what's coming up for me is like, you can literally freeze. Your body can shut off when you feel that pressure of having to perform instead of enjoying the process, enjoying the moment. And it's such a great, it's easier said than done, obviously. So tell me, when you left, the Olympics ended, you were there one Olympics. When you left, what was your experience when it was over? Because I feel like through my conversations with a lot of Olympians, they've all had a different experience. You talk about that you just shared this moment of being on the line with the goat. But when you left and walked away from that huge moment, the world's looking at you, all the eyes are on you. How was the literally internally like walking away? I think a lot of people that I experienced that they didn't know direction wise or where they were going. I don't know where your experience was.
Yeah, I was fortunate that I was really just getting started in my career. So I just, you know, like I said, I was 22. So I left with a sense, a lot of emotions, first of all, like gratitude is one of them, but also like a little bit of disappointment or frustration. And again, things like that where, as I said, in hindsight, I was like, hey, be kind to yourself. Like, look where you are. The fact that you could even be disappointed, look where you are. But I also left pretty hungry because I was like, hey, I'm 22. I've just learned this lesson. Like, let's go. Like I'm still in that journey of self-discovery. I mean, to this day, just obviously in a different capacity, but it's like, I'm in this journey of self-discovery. Like, let's see how good I could be. I've only been dedicating X years, serious years at this. And like, I'm still hungry. I'm still finding joy and excitement. So that was essentially it. I left and I came back to the US from Athens, Greece, and packed up my car with my gear and stuff, and you know, told my mother I was going to move out to Colorado, Boulder, Colorado to be exact, and just make a home of it and train in the mountains and, you know, maybe join a training group or not, but like figure it out. And fortunately, it was just me. I mean, I moved out there with my best mate, but it was just me as far as like no girlfriend, no kids, no anything. So you know, my monthly nut of like expenses, things like that wasn't terribly high how it would be now. So I was able to get by with like my contract and sponsors and really just in a very excited, hungry way, look forward to the next, you know, cycle of my running career and to just discover my love of running in a different capacity.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the word hunger because something lit up with what was possible. And now you're like, where can I push my edge? The next level of what you've got. Did you end up going to the Olympics again, or where did life take you? Or I know you're married with three kids. So where did the journey take you at that moment?
Yeah, so I was in Colorado for a total of 10 years, and I end up transitioning more from the track to the roads and the trails. So like my journey of self-discovery was like, hey, how can I enjoy running and what do I love to run? And I remember even when I was in high school, and to this day, my favorite running was really just me going into the woods or the trails and just losing myself in there and running for miles on end or hours on end. And I always enjoyed that, but that wasn't at the time something I thought you could even do professionally. Like I did do cross country in high school and I did it in college, but it was always like these carefully manicure courses and things like that. So when I moved out to Colorado, I was just constantly in the mountains, in the woods by myself or with training mates. So I didn't give up the Olympics. I still was very much interested, but, you know, unfortunately for one reason or another, injuries, bad time, et cetera, I never went back. But in the interim, I was able to find and explore that love of running over like trails and woods and, you know, do the IWF World Cross Country Championships and the Xterra Circuit and the Xterra Trail World Championships that I did a few times. So it was just a sort of thing where like, I want to run because I'm interested in finding out how good I could be, but I also really want to enjoy it. I don't want to do events that I don't want to do and things like that. So it was really beautiful time to be based in Colorado and then be able to travel the world and do races elsewhere as well.
What do you think running does for you in the mind of like giving you that whole being outside in the woods without distraction, with nobody? Like, what is that? What does that do for you? Like, what are you thinking while you're running, or what are you absorbing while you're running? I feel like I wish we did more of that in our world today.
Yeah, no, I mean, without getting too woo-woo or new agey, which I'm happy to do as well. And even before this podcast, I was literally sitting outside in my backyard barefoot, just touching grass, as the kids would say. But for me, you know, trail running or running in the woods has always been something that like centers me and grounds me. I've done some of my greatest thinking while out on a run, from about life, philosophy, brainstorming. Sometimes ideas and motivation, inspiration comes to me that I'm like, oh my God, that I haven't been able to get to while sitting at a desk or what have you. But also, it's also like a quiet time. Like I sometimes go, I don't know, minutes or miles. I'm like, whoa. I almost come back to my body. Like, I don't remember what I'd been thinking. Like, I've just been sort of floating through the woods and running at whatever pace. So it's just like something that's near and dear to my heart that I'm going to do, you know, forever and ever. And it's fantastic. I love to share it with friends, but like when I run with people, it's different. But when I run alone, it's like, I'm just in the woods and let the forest speak to me, and I speak to the forest. I speak through my head, through my consciousness, and come up with ideas and brainstorm and work out maybe issues and problems that I've been thinking about. And yeah, I always come back feeling better than when I went out. And that's also something that, you know, whether you want to call it like therapy or you know, like self-care, whatever it is, like it works for me and I love it. And I've been doing it since, you know, I was a young kid, and I still enjoy it.
Yeah, I do think there's a value that sometimes our world doesn't take in. And I think just explaining that, it's cool to hear, to remind ourselves to be in nature. I don't care if you want run, walk, it's so important. And I could feel that from you. So I know you coached for the New York Runners Club for a long time, and you've coached many people. What is it that you, number one, love about coaching people and getting them to pass what they think they can do? And then also, what is a common limited belief of some people you work with that comes up?
Yeah, so I would say what I love is that when I was running, and basically everything up to this point that I've explained was like my singular pursuit of like, how good can I be? I. And I wasn't able to give back to the sport that had given me so much. So when I retired in 2016, that was what was my North Star, if you will, my why, my mission is like, how can I give back to the sport that has given me so much? And it wasn't in a way it was like, oh, let me go work for one of these major corporations in the front office and, you know, sell shoes or gear to the mass. It was like, no, I want to feel like I could roll up my sleeves and have that tactile sort of feedback of like what I'm doing. So that's what I've loved, being able to like give back to the sports that has given me so much and continue to find different and innovative ways to reach more people. So even now I'm coaching remotely, that way I could again make it to scale and reach people that I'm not physically and geographically next to. And then I would say for just about everybody, like we all have those sort of limiting beliefs that sometimes, again, everybody's wired different, but sometimes it just takes somebody who maybe has been there, done that, which is in my case, put their arm around you, either literally or metaphorically, and say like, hey, like, you could accomplish more than you may give yourself credit for. Like, let's not set limits. Let's just start training. Let's just see how good you could get. And somewhere along this 12-week journey or 5-month journey or however long we're training together, we'll figure out like where you are, and then we can maybe set a goal for this upcoming race or whatever. But like, let's just enjoy the process and like not set limits, because oftentimes people do come in like, I want to run a marathon or I want to run a 10K or whatever, but, and then that but is like all the reasons why they can't do it, or they can't do it as fast as they would like to. It's like, no, like, dare to dream, put it out there, and then don't worry about it. Like, we're going to train as well as we can regardless. That's the goal, safely and methodically and intelligently, and focus on recovery and all these things that I've picked up along the way. And let's just see how good you could be. And so for me, it's super rewarding when I could, in a somewhat joking way, tell these people like, ha, I told you so, because then they go out and accomplish things that they literally didn't think they could do. And if you play a small part in that, which I've been fortunate enough to, it's so rewarding. And that's where I'm like, okay, I'm in the right space. I'm doing the right thing. Like, this is what I had envisioned. So it's wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, I ran the 1999 New York Marathon. I'm not a runner, played sport all my life, lacrosse, whatever. But I remember the year prior, watching the marathon for the first time. I'm like, if they could do it, I could do it. And I think you got me thinking, like, I don't want to ever run a marathon again. But I think if you're not with the right trainers, like, I didn't have, all I did was run. Like, I didn't train my body. There was no, it was in 1999. There was no like real clear plan. It was just like, run these miles. I mean, I'm assuming what you do besides running is so beneficial to being a good runner. Because I think I hurt my IT band. Like, there's a little fear in me running again, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Is that what comes up for people? It's like, oh, like.
I mean, you know, honestly, at this point, I've heard everything, or just about everything under the sun, you know, like, running is bad for your knees, and da, 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 and like, my cousin's third cousin's wife's brother, blah, 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 you know. And it's like, hey, like, everybody's built differently. But, you know, I said earlier, it's like, running meets you where you are. So like, I'm currently working with a few people, but like, one of my clients is literally doing a run walk. And they're training for this year's New York City Marathon. So they still have about, let's say, 6 months roughly. And they're doing run walk. And then I have another client who's getting ready for Berlin. And they're relatively new to running, but they are coming from a tennis background where they just have a higher level of athleticism and natural athleticism. And they're looking to run the 230s for the marathon. So it's like, okay, run walk to 230s. But like, the common denominator is like, they're both nervous about their goal, and they're both going to give it 100%. Just like, this person's 100% might equal around here, this person 100%, but like, their journey isn't going to be any different, in the sense of like, they're putting in the work. And my approach, or and my goal, is like, keep them healthy, educate them along the way, because that's sort of the approach I like to take when I coach people, which I joke around is not the best business model. But like, if I could educate them as well as telling them what to do, in a way they need me less and less, and like, by the time that training cycle is done, they're a better student of the sport than they were at the beginning, instead of just saying like, run 5 miles, and not tell them why and how it fits in the greater scheme. So, you know, my point with these two runners is that they're in different stages of their lives, different ages, different genders, etc., and obviously different goals, but like, their emotions are still very similar and very real to them. So to your point, it's like, yeah, like, people come at you with all sorts of like fears and trepidations and concerns, but like, is your job as somebody who's been there, done that, to like acknowledge it and then help them like be able to get past that? Because on the other side of that is where like, the beautiful journey of running really exists, and you could really find out how good you could be, and also just enjoy it.
Awesome. Father of three, I know you mentioned one of the most defining moments of being a father was you being a father. It was the most defining moment. Like, how did fatherhood change you? Being a single, you were with your mom, single kid. How did it change you when it comes to like all the success you've had and the purpose and legacy that you're leaving? Like, what shifted for you?
I believe being a father, I've always liked kids even when I was a kid myself. So that was, you know, like very funny that I like babysitting. I had younger cousins and et cetera. I liked the role of being a big brother back then. But becoming a father was just beyond transformational because the true first time where I was like, this is what I was actually put on this planet to be. Like the running and all that is like using my skill sets to help other people. And there's a legacy in there that I'm working to leave. As I, you know, mentioned in my recent Instagram post about leaving New York Roadhouse and leaving a place better than you found it. But becoming a father, I was like, this is the first time where like my existence lives outside of myself. You know, everything before that, it was like, I could go anywhere and I could do anything. And it's just me that I have to kind of think about. I obviously have like a partner and my mother and family members, but like, this was the first time I was like, no, like the most important thing on this planet is this little creature that lives outside of me. So it gave me a different sort of battery and purpose. And also just sort of motivation where it's like, I want to be a better person, a better father, a better everything, but also like I want to be a great example for them and then show them like what they're capable of and what's possible. So it really just made me kind of shift my focus a little bit and kind of like really find my North Star, if you will. And my oldest daughter was born in 2015. And I tried running professionally for another year and I retired the following year because I was like, I don't want to be traveling around the world anymore and doing things that take me away from that. Like I want to switch and use my skill set. So it also was like a defining moment for me. And it's something where now, you know, two kids later and three kids total, like my life and the purpose and what I've built and continue to build is so like second nature to them, is so natural to them that they understand it. And again, my wife and I try to be obviously good parents, but try to be like an example to them of like what you could achieve and how you could go about it and being a good person.
And knowing what you experienced as a kid and how you had Michael Jordan on your wall and how you did all different sports and you were in your bare feet, how do you parent them differently? I'm really passionate about this because I feel like this youth sport is a little bit crazy in how people get so hooked into a sport so young. What is your perception for your children of how you are helping them navigate being who they are, whether it's in the sports world or not?
Yeah, I think it's a wonderful question. Like, there's also a lot to unpack there in the sense of like my personal philosophy and view of like how youth sports are executed and carried out and even marketed in the US versus other countries and even continents. But I'll just say for myself and my wife, like what we really try to adhere by is called physical literacy. So we just want our kids to play and move and be active. And if they're outside playing and using their imagination, they might pick up a stick and like make up a game of like who could hit that tree, and they're working on their throwing motion without even realizing it. They're also working on catching. So like just let them be kids and play the same way that I was. But also, you know, they're fortunate enough that they have the ability to get exposure to a myriad of different sports. So we also expose them to that through myself doing it, my wife, but also just like, this is what's out there. Are you interested? My daughters did for the first time this year. I haven't never done it before. And it was awesome to see how they went from the beginning of the season, not knowing the rules, to like towards the end of the season being, you know, surprisingly good. And then same thing with other sports that they do. So just expose them to as many different sports and know that at some point they'll start to get a better sense of like what they like, what they don't like, whether it's a team sport, whether it isn't. And they'll also be able to get exposure to other sports. Like, hey, Papa, I want to try lacrosse, or I want to try, you know, like one of my daughters is doing mountain biking now on a team. And that's something like I didn't ever grow up doing. Like I mountain bike, but like, so just exposing them to different sports and letting them choose and without the expectation or pressure for them to need to take this to the next level and get a collegiate scholarship or go pro. If any of them want to do that in whatever sport, then by all means, we're going to support them the best we can, the same way like my mother did. But they also know that obviously Papa was like a professional runner and this and that, but like I don't push running on them, and I even don't push professional sports on them. So that's what we're doing so far, so good. But yeah, they obviously have friends who have been doing one sport and they're on that track. And, you know, whether they feel the pressure that friend of theirs or not, like, that's not up to me to parent. I just focus on, you know, supporting our kids and creating the best environment for them to, like, find the joy of running, find the joy of sports and really just engulf themselves in physical literacy.
And I love the, that you say physical literacy, and I love that you create the environment to be able to explore in that physical literacy. It's beautiful. Who do you think was your biggest influencer? I am, your mom probably was one of them. But was there anybody else on top of your mom? Or maybe it's characteristics that have shaped you who you are today?
It's a good question, because I usually just land at my mother because it's true. But, you know, I think to expand beyond that, I would just say, like, it's a weird answer, and I have the self-awareness to acknowledge it, but, like, myself, you know, like, again, I can understand I may come across as hubris because I don't think I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread, but it's like, I feel like, as I said before, like, we need to be kinder to ourselves, and, like, we're so much more resilient than we give ourselves credit for. And, like, we are only around for maybe one ride of this thing we call life. And it's like, I've had the privilege, and I'll continue to do it, but I've had the privilege, which I recognize as well, of having lived multiple lives in this one journey. You know, like, I didn't grow up in one place. I speak different languages, as you know. It's like, I've had different experiences, and, like, all in all through that, like, I've navigated different environments, cultures, climate, everything. And I've still come out, like, loving life, loving to be active, loving people. And I still have that, like, youth fullness about myself, which is, like, I want to go out and play. Like, I love to play alone, play with my kids. I love to meet new people. I love to have different experiences. And, like, I don't think I would have been able to now, as a 44-year-old, still feel this joy de vivre, as they say in French, joy of life, if I wasn't the way I am, which, again, nature and nurture, and, like, mother played a role in that, and my family and things like that. But, like, at some point, as a 44-year-old, like, it has to be you as well. Like, my mother's not holding my hand anymore, and I'm responsible for my own actions and consequences. So the fact that, like, I am where I am, and as I'm excited about life and about people, and eternally optimistic, and, you know, I like the term amor fati, lover of fate. Like, I think that comes down to me, and Agnos is the way I'm wired. So I would say, you know, aside from my mother, I would say myself, and, again, acknowledge that where a lot of that may have come from.
Love it. How would you describe yourself in 3 words? I know.
Optimistic. Optimistic, passionate, driven. If passion and driven are not the same, but yeah.
And I know we might have to do a part B when you get to announce your big thing. But for now,
for sure,
without announcing, what is the imprint that you hope to leave on the people around you, the people you coach? Like, what is the thing that, you know, people look at and say, Roberta left this on me, or it made an impact on me?
Yeah, wonderful question. I would say, like, I referenced in my latest post about announcing my departure for NYR, and I actually took it from my wife, which, when we go out to eat with our kids, we always say, or she says, and I echo it, which is, you want to leave a place the same or better than you found it. So to your specific question, I would say that, you know, whether I work with an individual one cycle for this race, or I've been working or being around people in the sporting and running world for many years or a decade or so, like, I would like for them, when they think about me, like, yeah, he made a positive impact in my life, whether it's a small or large. So yeah, I just want to leave, when I leave Earth, like, I want to leave things better than I found it, and have a positive impact on everybody that I reach, and know that I did the best with everybody, knowing that, again, you're not always going to be everybody's cup of tea, which is okay. But, like, if you operate with good intentions, I feel like majority of people are going to see that, it's going to shine through. And from what I've heard from the feedback from this post and my announcement, it's been very rewarding and been humbled to see that that seems to be the general consensus.
I can see that. You have definitely made an impact on many, and I love that you give back, and I love to hear your journey, but also how you navigate through the next version of being a parent and all of it. So thanks for coming on Journey to June, and I would look forward to learning what that next venture is and what you're going to, I don't know if it's a legacy, I think it's something big, so I can't wait to hear it. So thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and I look forward to a round two sometime.
We'd love it. Okay. Awesome. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Queen Carvania stood haloed by the morning sun. An army hung on her every word.
My champions, I have sold my chariot on Carvana. 'Twas a lovely SUV, an inexplicably queenly offer. They're even coming to the castle to collect it. Tonight, we feast!
An offer you can feast on. Sell your car today on Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.